My guest today, Taurian L. Washington, and I talk about the intersection where gay meets racism. Taurian shares some painful experiences and how he has learned to navigate racism in a healthy and respectful manner. Taurian's warmth, friendliness, and playfulness shine throughout this episode. He examples beautiful authenticity. Taurian is a sign language expert, an interpreter, and a dance instructor. Taurian LaMarcus Washington is in the house. Welcome, Taurian. I am so excited to have you here today.
I'm excited too. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for asking me to join this, your podcast, your dream, your baby.
and thank you for your willingness. So just to tell the audience a little bit about how we know each other. We've known each other for a little shy of a year.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We met in a very large online gay community. And for me, there was just kind of, we were in a group call and I heard him speak and I just immediately knew this was somebody that I wanted to know. So I don't remember which one of us reached out to which one initially, but one of us reached out and we, at any rate, we connected on a Zoom call and we got acquainted. And since then we've connected on many Zoom calls and it's been really great. One of the things that I have noticed as I reflect back on our conversations is that the conversation seemed to me to very quickly, become an intimate conversation. I mean, we've talked about, you know, deep aspects of our life, our internal world. And I'm wondering if you can share what is it that you think attributed to our connection going deep and intimate the way that it did?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Max, I was talking to you before about how, like, you have a very calming and soothing essence about you. It's just like a moth to a flame. I think I said that last time on the call. It's just your voice is never overpowering. It's never, it's very clear diction, but it also has this very calming tone. And it's almost like you just kind of draw towards you. And I think it comes from your many years of being a hairstylist where people come to kind of be your client, not just for hair, but for, you know, tell the life stories, what's going on with their lives. And you listen. But you also have a very good insight of every topic that we discuss, and you're always open to stuff that you don't know, you're not afraid to say, I don't know this, or I'm not aware of this, or you're like, or if you, and you always check yourself and say, if you say anything that you may not be like, I don't say appropriate, but or you're always quick to make sure that you're not offending anyone or that you're being very clear and respectful. So, and our relationship, I can say it's been a very smooth relationship. It's been very open, very respectful, authentic, and it's been a very beautiful one as well. So I'm very, very blessed to have met you in this program. So, and I'm very honored to be part of this. Like I said, your baby launching off, you know, hopefully more people will be more open to discuss their selves with you. And this is a good growth thing for myself, because I probably wouldn't have done this a couple of years ago. So this is something I'm very proud to push myself to, you know, show my face and my life story to people who may be in the same boat that I was years ago. So
yes, I think you're right. I think it does take a lot of courage to do this. And I just want to acknowledge the courage that you're demonstrating and showing up today and allowing yourself to be seen and be heard and in a vulnerable and authentic way. So my experience is very much the same. You know, when I first met you, you exude a warmth and a friendliness that is truly extraordinary. I mean, our world could use more people that show up with the gentleness and the kindness and the warmth and the friendliness that you bring to the table. I was drawn to you immediately. You're very easy to talk to. You two are very open, and you just have a lot of very fun energy about you.
Story of my life.
You have a lot of very fun energy about you. So tell me, Tarian, what does the authentic gay man mean to you?
I've said it once, I'll say it again. It's to be unapologetically yourself and never be ashamed of who you are. You were born the way you are for a reason, and just own it and love it. You are beautiful and intelligent and brave gay man for even saying the words "I'm gay" out loud and not being ashamed of that. And every man has their journey. Every person has their journey, but I don't want to discriminate anyone who may fit in this different spectrum, be lesbian, be somewhere in between, but for gay men, I've noticed that it's not just saying the words, it's committing to it, because I don't say it's difficult, but it's, the world is not set up for gay men. We have to set up our own lives for ourselves and be confident in who we are. Because even nowadays, even in 2021, people will still ask me, am I sure I'm gay? Am I sure? Have I not met the right woman yet? I'm like, well, but that's not your business, once. And then two, I wouldn't say it if I didn't feel like I've really dug deep into myself to feel like to be proud and be happy saying the words of who I am and owning that. And it feels so good. It's just a beautiful thing to just say I'm gay and be proud of that and be around like-minded men like yourself, who also had a journey to become who he is. And gay men, we are fabulous. We are beautiful. We are pioneers in our, not just our culture, but in the entire world. I hear people say some kind of like a negative thing about gay people, I'm like, well, all those clothes you wear, I'm more likely have been designed by gay men. Any program you watch has been created by gay men. And like all the terminology that we use in our culture definitely has been used in popular society, like shade and flossing or work girl or all this stuff that we have pretty much copywritten in our culture is now being popularized. Like it's like, oh, it's cool to have, you know, the gay friend, but then it was more like, oh, kind of like a cliche thing. I just find it so fascinating. And since I don't want to go into a spoiler, but you know, we're trying to talk about cultural things, cultural appropriation. So I just find that really fascinating.
Well, yes, and that was really well said. You know, I want the listener to hear that even though this man right here shows up with, you can already tell, an amazing amount of wisdom, I just want to stress, you know, he is an everyday man, just like you and me. You know, one of the things I've said is this podcast is not necessarily about experts and celebrities. It's about everyday people that you can relate to as the listener. And this man shows up with a lot of wisdom and worth listening to. So just to give you a little bit of overview, and I meant to do this, you know, when I first introduced you, but I want the listeners to know that, you know, in your everyday life, you are an interpreter and a translator. You teach both. You teach dance on the side for fun. You have a very active life. And you're pursuing some pretty incredible passions and some dreams. And I love that about you. So let's kind of delve into a little bit more of what you kind of gave a little hint about that. And I want to ask you, if the audience doesn't know, because this is on audio, Tarian is an African-American man. And so I asked him to come on the podcast and talk about his experience and his wisdom and his knowledge, D, all of the above, on the intersection where gay and racism meet. And so that's the only thing. None of this is pre-rehearsed. That's the only thing we talked about. I said, would you be interested in talking about this? He said, absolutely. And so here we are. And so I'm just going to turn it over to you now, and then it'll just unfold. But what would you like to say about that intersection?
it's going to be interesting because I identify as African-American. I'm very proud of my African-American roots. I come from a very proud African-American family, but I also am both part of the African-American community and the Latin community. I was biculturally grew up, and I couldn't imagine my life without both cultures. So I definitely come from both perspectives of that in the gay world, because it's a very interesting dynamic. Because automatically, I mean, the fact that I'm Black and I'm a dark-skinned Black man, there's just automatically a sexual innuendo that comes from me being a Black man and being gay. And either I'm clearly gay or I'm not gay enough, and it's never a perspective because there's a stereotype of how Black men are supposed to portray themselves. That I have to be like a stereotypical urban character that they see in a TV show or in a movie or music. And even though that's still part of who I am and my culture and my family, I've always been more of a, I've always been my own person. And for years, I definitely didn't understand why I was like that. I thought it because I just didn't fit in. And no matter how much I tried and like begged and prayed and all that stuff, why didn't people didn't see me for who I was? Because I didn't see me for who I was. I was too busy trying to conform to people's beliefs of what they thought I should be. But I never, it was like trying, I guess trying to walk backwards with no eyes behind your head and just constantly bumping into something. And and coming from a very strong African-American family, my brother definitely was like the spokesperson of how a Black man is supposed to pray and portray himself. And in those times, the word gay to me was like men who kidnap little boys and take them to this island and molest them. That's what I thought that was, because that's what I heard. That's what I would hear in the church. I come from a very strong Christian Pentecostal family background, and top of being African American and in the Latin community. So all that, the religion, cultural, and and these cultures have a very, very, I don't want to say negative. No, I'll go ahead and say negative aspect of what it is to be a gay or homosexual. I heard that word burned into my ears as a child until my 30s still. Like the word homosexual is like, it's said in such a kind of a foul, like it's a disease, like we choose to be this way.
Derogatory.
Like we choose to be this way to be spiteful and to challenge people and go against the norm. When I'm like, this is me being myself unapologetically. And I'm not going to say that. I say this more than once. I'm not going to be less to make you feel comfortable. I'm not going to make myself uncomfortable to make you uncomfortable. And sometimes you have to bite. Sometimes we have to eat. Sometimes we just kind of compromise for people just to avoid confrontation. Am I going to be like, you know, holding my partner or walking my heart, or making out my partner in public in certain, like at church or something? Like, probably not. But it's also not a shame that I used to carry around that, oh no, because I definitely have made the steps to come out to my entire family, which is something I never imagined doing even 5 years ago when I was still in the military. I could even tell them I told my mother and I told my older brother, but and that was hard enough as it is, and they definitely didn't accept it. They heard it, but they wouldn't accept it. They it was like, one day I'm going to change. And I let their negative mentality affect me in my personal life. But when I just literally just said, you know what, fuck this, I'm going to live my life and be who I am and not apologize. When I came out, took my power back and just said it to my entire family, they can no longer hold that against me or hold that above me, because it's not a secret anymore since everybody else knows now.
I love what you just said about take your power back. I love the way you language that. Take your power back, because that is something that we all need to do on some level. Every last one of us. It's so easy to not even realize that you're giving your power away. And I love that you stated that the way you did. So tell me a little bit about your journey in the gay community as an African-American man in the gay community, have you experienced racism among gays?
Definitely. See, for me, the word racism is a very particular word. And I grew up, like I said, I grew up in a very multicultural community where me being a dark-skinned Black man in that area was bad in their eyes. And I got called every word from the N-word to, there's a word that we use in Spanish, in Mexican dialect, that's called mayache. And I definitely heard that a lot. Or chango, which means monkey. I definitely was called that a lot as an adult and kid. Because it's something about this that really makes some people uncomfortable at first. And the fact that I don't necessarily exude the stereotypical aspects of what people assume a Black man is supposed to talk or act or walk. It's like kind of like people don't know how to place that. But I think the first time I ever felt any kind of gay racism or I call it ignorance is definitely on dating sites or when I first came out. Like I'm supposed to dress a certain way because I'm gay, but I'm Black, but I'm also, you know, I'm still a guy. Like, do I have to wear, you know, stereotypical like sequins, or do I have to wear, you know, super tight jeans? My mother always told me this way: Black people were built differently. So I wish I could wear skinny jeans. I couldn't even pray to get into skinny jeans, and I'm a runner. So like my legs literally bust out. Like I, as a dancer, I am known for ripping the seams, the mid-seam of my pants all the time. All the time. I got caught sewing the crotch of my jeans. And I wish I were joking, but I am not. I definitely inherited my mother's body type as, like, you know, my mother's very voluptuous woman, as she is, juicy woman. Women in my family are definitely very curvy. And I definitely inherited that in my lore body. So you know, growing up also, you know, and not I did go through a whole, like, you know, body image and weight gain in my preteen age, so definitely is something that I had to struggle with. But back to racism in the gay community, yes, I definitely see that. And I definitely have to say I see it in other cultures too, especially when it comes to, I have a lot of Asian friends, and one of my best friends growing up in my gay years is Filipino. And I swear, it's just like, it's such a fetish for guys to see him at a club. Like, oh, it's like their prize. And I wish I can deny this. When I go to a club, since I am a dancer, I try to hold that back a little bit, because there have been many times where I have been grabbed by this person multiple times, because he thinks just because I'm a dancer, he can just grab me whenever he wants to. And Tari now would have been like, no, sir. But me being a little more passive at those early years, I tolerated mistreatment. And I think it was more of a prize thing. Oh, I got this chocolate dancer here. Let me woo him on the dance. I'm like, no, you're not wooing me, but you definitely made me feel very uncomfortable and creepy. But it is harder for someone of my culture, my skin tone, to be proud, because it's something about, and it's not just in the gay culture, but in society, the darker you are, the more it's like a stigma. Like people assume just because I'm dark skinned that my family comes from Africa. And they do, like my ancestors do, but my family's been in this country for 200 to 300 years. And I can trace back my ancestors to my great 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 grandparents, because we keep that very I've definitely sat down with my grandmothers and great grandmothers and discussed our family history. And I wrote it down and asked questions, because I was fascinated and curious about where we come from. And so I know that part of me, but I also have a lot of other heritage from Europe, from my mother's family's Native American. My father's family's French and German, but that's something I don't feel like I should have to clarify. But just because what you see here is there's more to what you just see there. From African culture is so, African American culture is so broad and so diverse, and depending on where you're from in the country, you can be complete. There's so many different aspects and just like heritage that's just so beautiful. I'm very proud of my upbringing and my culture. I'm very blessed to have that growing up, to be part of a very proud African American family. My grandmother is my road dog. She is such a ooze of proud blackness. and people, her name is Margie Washington, and people just flock to her. She is the matriarch of our family. She is the backbone of our family. And I'm so proud of being related to someone who's just this little 4'10" woman that as a child I was petrified of, because she just oozes like this like confidence, just like just strong, and like she will break your neck if you try her. And I believe that. I'm glad I had that very, very solid image of what it is to be a proud, strong black woman. And I say that for both my grandmother and my aunt and my mother. Definitely show me the survival aspects of what it is to be a proud black woman.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about your personal experience with racism, the times that you have been in some way discriminated against, or and how that was for you, what that brought up for you, what it felt like, the long range effects of that.
Growing up in South Texas, my family, we lived in the Latin area, and we're the only black family in the neighborhood, more than likely. So, I remember this in detail. I was in the fourth grade, and even though I knew I was black, and I was in I was the only one of my people really in the school. I remember this. I was sitting at lunch, and it's when we all have to sit in the same classroom, in the class like table section in lunch. And my last name is Washington, so I'm always at the very end of the line. And I never forget this. There's only one sheet left, and I went to go sit at the table, and I never forget who it was. It was Jerry. He looked at me. He's like, "No black people sit at this table." And didn't know what shame was, but I felt so much shame that all I did was literally take my food, sit at the very end of the cafeteria by myself, and just bawled. And it's funny thing is, no adults came and asked why I was doing that. And I didn't feel like I had a voice. I could even tell my parents or my family, because I was shamed and embarrassed of that. And I say black people, but I'm pretty sure he said the N-word. I'm pretty sure he did. And some of my classmates said something to him, but no one, I want to say, I think someone came and said it with me, but other than that, and it was a continuation. Jerry Mothragon, I will never forget his name. I practically grew up with him from elementary school to middle school. And for some reason, he just never liked me. And so you always say, you know, me being black, me being, and I just took it. But he had a very clearly physical, not disability, but a deformity. He had like a cleft lip and a cleft nose, and he is very, very clear. And he kind of talked above his larynx. So he had a very nasally voice too. I knew at that age, if I ever mentioned that to him, that I would be in trouble and not him. So I felt alone and isolated, and I really feel like I could, because I feel like it would have been weak of me to to complain about it. So I just took it. But I also was a very sensitive kid. And that was the first memory I can think of when I literally felt like my skin color and my race was a problem. Because I always knew I was different from the people I was growing up around. Especially because, I mean, fortunately, I did go to a very, I went to an African-American church and I have a very African-American family. So I did have that. But the majority of time I was at school in a both a bilingual Latino school. And I was, my mother and I were the only Black kids at the school. So it was definitely a lot of discrimination I felt from the culture that I felt like I should have been more identified with, but no, definitely. And then at that age, I definitely learned, even though I'm part of this community, I'm still out of it. And it's not something I really learned how to balance until literally in my late 20s, early 30s.
That shame that you mentioned when he told you you couldn't sit at the table, what long-range effect did that have on you?
There was a fear of being ugly and discriminated and not having someone who looked like me, that there's something wrong with me. And the fact that I feel like I couldn't talk to anyone about it definitely started a whole like spill over, you know, for many years that definitely have taken many years to get over. And it's still there, you know, those voices and that feeling is still there, but you know how to take your power, like we said.
You know, I think it's important to identify that experience when he told you what he told you, you applied a meaning to that. You know, that you were rad, you were ugly. What else did you say?
Worthless, disgusting.
Yeah.
Alone.
And so it's important to call out here. I want the listeners to really get this, is when we have an experience like that, any kind of experience that kind of traumatizes a little bit, we often will in our head make that mean something about us.
Yeah.
And then we carry that meaning throughout our life, especially if it's something that happened to us as a child, we will carry that meaning with us throughout our lives, unless we do the necessary work to go back and realize we've applied a meaning. Because when you can go back and do the work and realize that you have applied a meaning, albeit unconscious at the time, now you're conscious of it. And now in that being conscious of it, if you applied a meaning, you can unapply a meaning or reapply a new meaning. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. This is where the very powerful part of our work comes in. And it's not so much about, you know, therapy tends to focus on the experience. And if it was truly traumatizing, then trauma recovery is a necessary thing. But oftentimes it's something where it's less about the experience itself. It's much more about the meaning that we applied to the experience. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So your road moving forward would be to work with that meaning applied. That's where you talked about taking your power back. That's one of the ways right there that you can further take back your power. And that is to look at that meaning that you applied all those years ago, see if that meaning is still in place, if it's still being the driver in your life, it's still got a hold of the steering wheel, in other words. And you are at a point where you can rewrite the script. Once aware of the script, you can rewrite the script.
And it'd be a fabulous script too, yes.
Well, and when you do that, if you were gonna rewrite that script in a sentence or two right now, that the script was, I'm ugly, I'm meaningless, I'm worthless, I'm bad. If you were going to rewrite the script in a manner that would free you from that shame and would empower you, would help, that would enable you to step back into your power, what would that be? What would that new script be in just a sentence or two?
Well, actually, there's a practice I do every night before I go to bed. And before I say my prayers, because I always pray before I go to bed, I look in the mirror and I give myself praise if I'm going to say anything about myself, it's going to be positive words. So I always look at myself in the mirror and I tell myself I'm a beautiful, amazing, strong man who will accomplish and do great things in this world, who continues. I am a great son, brother, uncle, teacher, educator, and I am amazing. And don't ever forget that. And I always tell myself, I love myself, and I love myself more now than I ever have. Because I say those words because for many years, I didn't believe that. That wasn't even my ideal, that I was beautiful, smart, intelligent, amazing. And I definitely encourage myself, because if you can't love yourself, how, like, to quote RuPaul, to be really gay, like, how are you going to love yourself, anyone else, if you can't love yourself first? And definitely that's something that I live by now. When people ask me how am I doing today? I'm like, I'm doing excellent. I'm doing wonderful, spectacular, beautiful. I want them to feel that beauty that I have in myself to them, because I always believe in paying it forward. If you want to receive goodness, you can give goodness out to people, because that will motivate other people to be better to others. In my opinion,
those things that you say to yourself before you go to bed every night, that is certainly the way I experience you.
Live by your own truth. And I have to. I am not perfect. I am not perfect. Anybody who knows me, like, really, really, really well, knows that I am far from perfect. But I really, as an adult male, I definitely put the work in when it comes to bettering yourself. Personally, not just to others, but for me, because you have to, and really dig deep down of what makes Tarian Tarian, and the whole 36 years of me and my existence, what's got me to here. I am very thankful for my upbringing, but also, you know, the children. I've been in therapy for almost 8 years. I have a fabulous therapist, and we have cried and laughed and joked, and I am so blessed to have that. God put this woman in my life, because she has definitely been just a pure blessing of me loving myself for my authenticity. There you go. And look at the word behind you, authentic, being authentic.
So let's fast forward a little bit to present time now, because we're talking about some experiences that you had as a child when you experienced racism. Now, as a gay man, an adult, what's it like now, or what happens now when you come in contact with somebody that is being less than accepting or less than respectful? I'm sure now it comes in a lot more subtle forms than it did from the lunchroom table when you were in elementary school. But talk about that a little bit. What's it like now, and how do you navigate it now differently than you navigated it then?
And just to be clear, I really share this opinion now, especially now than ever, that the word racism does get thrown out more than it used to. Oh, no, not used to, but it has a different meaning. It has a very different meaning. Okay, my battery is still good. I don't want my battery to go out while we're talking. Racism is still exists in this country, and it's still very prevalent. But when I hear people say it, it's kind of like, I'm not racist, but, or I have an opinion, blah, 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 but I'm not trying to be racist. I'm like, no, well, no one's saying you are, but you're clarifying that you're not for some reason. I'm very quick to call someone out for a very off-colored, and someone with me who's part of many cultures, from African-American culture to Latin culture to the deaf community, I definitely am very quick to call people out on their BS about it's, and people don't like to be singled out. People don't like to be outside of the loop, or be the person on be the person that people look sideways, like, oh, you think that way? Oh, okay. And in this very sensitive time that we live in now, because people are very sensitive about being called out on certain things. I'd rather you take me as being honest and truthful than being fake and phony. And if you make an all-colored comment about me, oh yeah, like especially, okay, I think I called someone out a couple of weeks ago, because And my day job, I work at a paint store, and I definitely deal with a lot of painters who have a lot of Latin workers that work with them. And they say a lot of very racist or very ignorant comments about them when they're not around. And I'll be the first one to say, so you're talking to a Black man, but I'm not part of the Latin community and the Mexican community. So when you say that and things like that, it's disrespectful and it's ugly. So don't say that. And, no, I didn't mean that. But I'm like, no. You respect the people who work for you because they don't have to, especially what you pay them. So, and not everybody is Mexican. They all come from different countries, and it's not just one. So please be aware of what you're saying and who you're talking about, and learn and maybe learn their language before you say something about them. Just it's ignorant is bliss, but you know what? People are so comfortable in their own like mess that they don't want to clean it up. So, but I always try to put it out there in front. When someone says something off color, racist, I will call them out right off the bat. And that's something that I definitely have to grow into with my experience. If I had my experience, I wouldn't know how to use my words to effectively. Because you should be just, being about gay, and now it's racism too.
Do you feel like most of the time that's well received?
When I go off there, let me make sure I phrase myself correctly too.
Do they get it when you call them out? Do they get it, or are they just ruder or blow you off or roll their eyes? Or?
Hope they are. You know, people can show one thing and still be one way inside.
Yes,
people are very, very multidimensional in that aspect. They may have this facade, but then next week they say something like that again. So people, we're creature of habits, and I am definitely creature of habits.
Old habits do die hard. They do. Yeah.
I'm going to charge my laptop. I'm taking back my laptop. I feel like it's going to shut off, and I don't want that to happen. Just in case, I hate for us to lose power again. There you go. Now we're back.
So I have been in a couple of different organizations, men's organizations. One of them, mostly straight men, but some mix. And then another one, the one that you and I met, that was all gay men. And I've noticed that it's quite common in these groups for men to call each other brother. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen this, as I recall, like in real life, but I've seen it depicted in movies, films, where, a white man will refer to a Black man as brother, and the Black man will react to that like, you're not my brother. And so I want to hear your experience with that when you're in these groups where men in general are referring to each other as brother. How does that land for you when someone else calls you brother?
I love that. I do love that. And for me, I you're talking to the perfect person to say that to, because I am someone who grew up very multicultural. So when I see people address me as their equal, because that's the term. That's literally just like, oh, we're the same. We're brothers. We may not be blood brothers, but we're brothers in spirit. And that to me is a beautiful thing. Because like I said, when it comes to certain terms that I use nowadays a little bit loosely, I'd rather someone call me their brother than something else.
Exactly.
Exactly. And it's two minds or two beings coming together in unity. And that's actually in Spanish, that's something that we use a lot. Hermano, which means brother. And it's something, it's a term that we generally say to each other to like, hey, we're two beings coming together and we're creating, it's showing the love between two men.
Well, and I feel the same way you do about it. I think it's a beautiful equalizing way of expressing. But after I saw those depictions in the movies, I've been a little bit reluctant to say that to an African American man, because I don't want that to feel offensive, and I was unclear. So thank you for clarifying. Of course, I know that's going to be different for every single person. That's the way you see it. But I do think that that is something that we need to be mindful of. We need to be mindful that for some men, that might not work.
You know, to be called
brother, because I know that and you can correct me if I'm wrong, in the African American culture, brother is a term that's used among Black men. And so that's why I think it could be offensive sometimes when a white man says it. It's like, no, you're not my brother. So I have been thoughtful and conscious about that. In fact, I think before I would call a Black man my brother, I would ask permission.
And I think it's not necessarily offensive, but people will get offended. People will get, and you can't control people's how they take you.
Right.
You can give people flowers and give them love, make them a big dinner, but they may still see you as somebody who's beneath them and somebody that you don't have time for. And like I said, my upbringing growing up very multicultural, I definitely see things a little bit differently from that. So I'm less likely to get offended by that. And my thing is not charging. I don't want my laptop. Okay, we're good now. Sorry, I keep doing it, but my laptop keeps saying that. So we're good now. Sorry about that. But yes, as someone who is very, very multicultural and a part of so many communities, it's just something it's just a beautiful thing when, especially when men are not afraid to show love for each other, you know, to show this like respect, and, you know, because we're not taught as men to be vulnerable and to be affectionate and emotional. And when I see men not afraid to do that, I find that just beautiful. So,
yeah, I agree completely. So Tarian, if you were going to share words of wisdom, something that you think maybe, and I'm talking about, you know, because this is all about gay men. So if you could share with gay men, particularly gay men that are not of color, how they might raise their awareness a little bit about this issue, the intersection of gay and racism, what words of wisdom would you share that might help them understand how they can show up a little more authentically and a little more openly and a little more respectfully?
I would just say those who are not part of the race or their culture is just to listen and have an open mind and open understanding, because I find it really funny, just like in the gay community, how our culture is like broadcast to be like this ideal like way of living life, you know, with shows like RuPaul's Drag Race. In the Black community, you know, with rap videos and music culture and movies, they show us as being this one dimension, and our culture is so beautiful and it's so vast. Just to listen to someone's authentic truth of where they come from and not expect someone to act that way. Just because when I grew up as a kid, I was like, you don't talk like a Black dude. I'm like, what am I supposed to talk like? Especially I'll get that. I used to, not as much now, but let's say when I was in the military, I always could tell you don't sound Black. I'm like, then what am I supposed to sound like then? I'm American.
That's actually a very racist comment to make. You know, being fully transparent, this has been 20 years ago, but I was on my first date with an African-American man, and he was college educated, very articulate. And on our first date, I thought I was passing a compliment. I look back now and I'm horrified at the thought of this, but I said, you know, you're the whitest Black man I've ever met. And he didn't say anything. You know, and we went out on a second date. And on the second date, I said, I think maybe I said something racist on our first date. He said, you did. And I said, why didn't you say something? And he said, well, because I could already tell your heart. And I knew that you didn't mean it the way it came out. And I said, no, I didn't. But I said, please, I mean, don't let that go. I mean, I know it's not your responsibility, but don't let me. I mean, because if you don't say something, I'm just going to do it again. You know, I mean, there's a certain level of ignorance going on here. And I've been thinking about this particular topic in the week now leading up to us recording this today, and thinking about my part in racism and how I've experienced and what came to me. I get all these intuitive type messages, and what came to me on one of my morning walks, and I would love to know your thought on this, is there is for many, many of us, I mean, there are people out there that are racist and they're intentionally racist. Their hearts are filled with hate and fear, and they're intentionally racist. But then there's those of us, and I have certainly fallen into this category at times. My heart would never intend to be racist, but I have a lifetime of programming. I grew up here in the South in a rural community in Central Texas. I grew up working in a family business, and there was a man in my father's employment to date, I have never, ever met anyone as racist as he was. And I was exposed to him for a number of years during my formative years. My dad bought this business when I was 11 years old, and this guy worked for us until I was 20. I was exposed to, and he spewed it all the time. He spewed it all the time. And so it's not my heart that's racist. It's this habitual programming that I received. And I didn't get any say in that. You know, and so there was a time when I would have said, well, I'm not a racist. Well, I know better than that now. Bullshit. Anybody that says I'm not a racist, they just are ignorant. You know, if you have ever heard of or seen it was a Broadway, then it did off Broadway. It was a musical called Avenue Q.
Oh, yeah.
Avenue Q is phenomenal. You know, it's a mixture of human actors and puppets. But one of the songs in that musical is Everyone is a Little Racist. And the first time I heard that song, tears streamed down my face. Because in that moment, I realized I had been saying I'm not a racist. But the truth was that's not true. I've been programmed with all kinds of shitty stuff that I don't like, and I'll do all I can to purge that and release it and let go of it. But it's a process. How do you let go of something you don't even know that you have?
Exactly.
And so sometimes it rears its ugly head, and I have to go, oh Lord, there's some of that childhood programming, and I have to step back and have a little conversation with myself and say, there it is. Now you see it. Can you let it go? But I think that we have to start off with, you know, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous. Hello, my name is Maddox and I'm an alcoholic. Now, I'm not. I'm using that as an example. But we all need to be able to start off sitting in a circle where we say, you know, my name is Maddox and I'm a racist. Because we can't heal something that we don't know is wounded.
Exactly.
We can't. I hope I'm making sense.
I think you're making total sense. You're speaking from his perspective too.
And please add to this in any way you can, because you know you're seeing it from a different vantage point than I am, and I so much want to see it from your vantage point. I try my best to put myself in the shoes of the people that I come in contact with, and certainly the people that I care about. And you are one of those people.
I will be. I mean, my whole life, I have lived. I say this all the time. My life journey is understanding different cultures and different communities, and respect it. But I will be lying to say that I have never said a racist or an ignorant or discriminative comment towards either any race, religion. I went to a Jewish synagogue for the first time in my life last night. And I was very much like, I want to make sure I don't say something that's disrespectful to this community, this beautiful community with so much history and so much. But it was such a welcoming situation for me. But still, I also am very aware that I am not perfect. And growing up in an African-American community, there are a lot of off-colored and racist things that are said about other cultures outside of the African-American community. There is. And yeah, I remember
racism is a two-way street, isn't it?
It is. It
is. And we don't often really acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. Just hurt people hurt people.
Yes, hurt people hurt people. You know, I've got a great story I want to share, a very funny story actually, because it wasn't an ugly or hurtful thing. But when I was probably maybe 22 or 3 years old, my parents had a Jewish woman working in their employment. She was an office worker, worked alongside my mom. And she was right about my age, and we became friends. Mm-hmm. And one year at Thanksgiving, she invited me to go and spend Thanksgiving with her family. And I accepted the offer, the opportunity, and went, and we had this lovely Thanksgiving meal. And after the meal, we were all going to play games. They had pulled out all these board games, and we were just going to spend the afternoon laughing and playing games. And we were playing this game called Boggle. I think Boggle was the name of it. It was a word game. Mm-hmm, yeah. And there would be all these letters down in on the table, and you had to string the letters together. You had to find words. You couldn't touch the letters, but you had to find letters that were touching each other and form words. And the person that each round formed like the most words, they won that round. And so it's my turn, you know, and you were identifying the words that you had seen on the table. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jew, J-E-W. Well, I know I'm sitting in a whole, you know, family full of Jewish people. I say, Jew, J-E-W. And they go, oh, you can't use proper nouns. And I said, oh, I'm not using it as a noun. I'm using it as a verb, you know, like when you Jew somebody down on their price.
Oh, God.
Okay. Okay. You have never seen an entire family converge on one person the way they converged on me. Now, I was like, no, wait, hold on, wait a minute. I mean, they were not ugly, but they were on me, you know, they were on me. And for the first time, I realized that that word, as I was using it, was connected to the Jewish culture. I had grown up hearing that term. There's a lot of words in the English language that mean multiple things. You know, a nun wears a habit, but we also make habits. You read the newspaper, but in the past tense, it's red, which is a color spelled differently. There's a lot of stuff in the English language. So in my innocence, and I had no idea that the word, as it was used, Jewing somebody down in their price, was a derogatory thing about Jew people. Jewish people, I had no idea. And of course, as soon as they pointed that out to me, I was just absolutely mortified. I begged for forgiveness. And of course, we all had an insanely funny laugh about it. As soon as it was cleared up, we all laughed raucously and we moved on. But this is a perfect example of how racism is inside of us in ways that we don't even know. You know, when I was growing up, we were all taught a little rhyme called Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo. And I don't need to tell you how that second sentence mm-hmm, of that went.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, and this was just something that as a child, you didn't know there was anything wrong or derogatory about that.
And
I was, you know, it was later in life. I mean, in the South, there was another name for Brazil nuts. Oh, and it was a very derogatory term. But as a child, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. It was later in life when somebody pointed out to me that that was a derogatory term because I had no way of knowing that. And so it's just programmed into us the way toxic masculinity is programmed into men, it's programmed into us the way so many stereotypical expectations are programmed into us as gay people. And every community, it doesn't matter which community, we have things we have to overcome, don't we?
And it's a process. It's a journey.
And it's a process.
It's a marathon. It's not a race. There you go.
It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. There you go. And we have to be willing to put our sneakers on and get into the marathon. Mm-hmm. We have to be willing to face that stuff and make the necessary changes. You know, there isn't anything inherently wrong with saying a racist comment when you didn't know any better. No. It's inherently wrong if you continue saying it.
Because you're rabbits.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, we were put down here with free will.
Mm. Yes. So
it's up to us, you know, and I am on, I'm in the side of the camp that I no longer believe that racism is like, and I'll speak about racism against African-American people. I no longer believe that that's African-American people's problem. Racism is all of our problem. And it's a, I mean, God knows Black people are doing everything they can. Mm-hmm. And, if there's ever going to be a change, it's going to be because we as white people step up. Mm-hmm. And we do our part to end racism. It is our problem too. We are all human beings. Mm-hmm. We are all human beings. Mm-hmm. When we are happy, we laugh. When we are sad, we cry. When you cut us, we bleed. And that blood is red. It doesn't matter what color your skin is or what language you're speaking or what country you're from or what religion you practice or believe in. We are all human beings, and I'm wondering when we're going to actually start acting like that.
Well, we have, and in the last couple of years, people have definitely been more willing to change or talk about these topics, you know, openly and freely. There'll be a lot of people who may not agree that it's not a Black topic, and still, I know my people, and they're not done talking. and there's a lot, and it's engraved in us from our childhood, in our culture, just all the stuff we've gone through. Even kids who've never seen racism in their lives, like really have never seen it, they're taught and of what happened to their family or their ancestry. So it's innate in our, and it's kind of in our blood, but not necessarily in our blood, but it's kind of in there.
So. I get it. It is. You know, I think this is a conversation that doesn't happen in our gay community very often. I'm very rarely in a gay social setting where racism gets brought up. And it's a conversation we need to be having. I'm not saying every conversation needs to be this, but it's a conversation that we need to be having. So I feel so blessed that you were willing to come on to the podcast today and bring this conversation to light for all of our listeners, no matter what background they come from, because this is a human topic. This topic is not specific to any race. It's a human topic, and we need to have it.
It's the most important thing to say. It's more important to say that it's a human thing. We're all humans.
We're all humans, and it is a human thing. Anything that you'd like to add?
I think I've said, I mean, I think we both had a lot to say. All thing I'll probably say is just like, just for people who, to just be open and understanding who you are and to understand someone else too. And we all have our own perspectives, and take people for who what they give you, you know, just it's, we're all beautiful and we're all flawed, but you know, to understand and to accept our each other is, funny, is probably one of the easiest things to do, but we as humans make it hard.
Yes, we do. We do. So I've got a couple of three, maybe rapid fire questions for you for rapid fire answers. So what is the one thing that you know that you can do to live more fully into being an authentic gay man?
Love myself.
Beautiful. When was the last time you cried, like out loud cried, tears streamed down your face?
I would have had a hard time answering that a couple of years ago, but let me see. I was reminiscing like something my grandfather told me years ago. Yeah, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago. I was just thinking about something that he said to me. Oh yeah, I was thinking about the last time I spoke to him. And yeah, that definitely hit a trigger for me. Yeah. So that was that moment. Anything happening with like father, son, grandfather? My father was basically my grandfather was basically my parental male figure. You know, I do have my father. He's still part of my life, but my grandfather was definitely the male figure for the majority of my teenage years. So.
Had a big impact. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So when was the last time you cried in front of another gay man?
Oh, I don't know if I can answer that. I'm not sure. Maybe with you. I mean, I definitely don't know. I've cried, but I definitely got emotional talking with you. So. When I do cry, I don't cry for long periods of time. I usually cry for like 20 seconds and I stop. I don't know why. That's literally how it is. Like a tears fall down and then that's it. And me being an actor, I always want to make sure I cry from my because I can make myself cry. So I always want to make sure my crying is coming from a good place, a real, true, honest place.
I think that 20 second thing you're describing is a great topic for another conversation that you and I'll have at some point in time. This has been awesome. Taurean, thank you
Beautiful.
So much
Beautiful.
For coming on and Beautiful. Sharing so openly and honestly and being so real with me and with our listeners. It's nothing short of amazing. And I just want you to know that you are an authentic gay man.
As you are a beautiful and exceptional, phenomenal, fabulous, authentic gay man. Is that enough bombs for you?
Thank you.
And just something, audience, something that Maddox taught me. When someone gives you a compliment like that, don't say thank you, say I receive it.
As I did teach you that, didn't I? Put my both hands on my heart and I say thank you, I am receiving that. Mm-hmm. And I've been training some of the people in my life to do that. It's amazing what happens. It's amazing the way people respond when they hear you and see you do that. Hands on heart, thank you. I am receiving that.
En español, lo recibo.
Thank you.